Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, one of the things I talk about often on the show, on Facebook, and has been a kind of a theme for years for me, in the Christian church, in the evangelical church, whatever you want to call it, that we have largely, over the years, and sadly, de-intellectualized the faith. You pick up books and you start reading from Christian authors from 100 years ago and back, and you're like, wow, these people were incredibly smart and just geniuses, one right after another. But there was a day and a time when some of the greatest thinkers on the planet were followers of Jesus Christ, and largely, I think we've lost that intellectual side. We've de-intellectualized the faith. Well, today on Theology Thursday, we're going to talk about re-intellectualizing the faith. God has given us minds with which to think, and we ought to use them for his glory, which makes me think of Romans 12:2, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. What does that look like? How do you do that? And then what does that look like? How does it show itself off, if you will, in the Christian faith? Ben Holloway was on the show just a few weeks ago, instructor of philosophy and history of ideas at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary there in Wake Forest, North Carolina. I am on a remote location in the mountains of Virginia, broadcasting from there. So Ben is joining us by phone. And you'll notice that Ben is not exactly from these parts. He is a Brit. And Ben, thanks so much for being back on the show. How are you?
Very well. Pleasure to be with you, Steve.
Great to have you back on, and I was really excited to do this. I know we kind of pulled it off at the last minute, but thanks for jumping in here on Theology Thursday as we talk about this. And we talked about this a little bit, Ben, before we parted ways after the last show, but kind of engaging the mind, talking about truth, talking about education, and I know you've kind of got your own story about engaging the brain, but why is this topic so important to you? And then I definitely want you to share kind of your own journey through this path of kind of re-intellectual our faith.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, we don't think about thinking very much. We just kind of do it or we don't. And in the church, we don't have an option. Our faith is a thinking faith. We are confessional and creed-based, and our faith is based on a set of revealed scriptures in sentences which require mental effort. And we have to think about the world in which we're in. So we don't have an option of being a mindless faith, and the Lord has given us these minds to glorify him and to use to express and to think through his truths that he has given us, and to think through the truths that we can discover in the world and to use them rightly and to think thoughts after him. After all, that's a part of our purpose, to know him well, and this is all the prerequisite for declaring him well, for obeying him well, and for working and serving in the church well. We do these things mindfully, and our faith sort of determines that. I mean, my own story is that I really wasn't a thinker. In fact, I was a bit of a school failure, and my father always used to tell me, he used to have a little phrase he would use to prevent us saying silly things, was engage brain before operating mouth. and I think I could have extended it to engage brain before operating anything, and I
Indeed.
Wasn't much good at that at all. So much of my young life was spent attending to avoiding thinking as much as possible. When I was at school, actually, I took a class later on in life. I was probably mid-teens by this time, and I took a class called Design and Technology, and during which I was taught how to MIG weld. By my teacher, who was called Mr. Carpenter, interestingly enough, since he taught a lot of carpentry. Interestingly enough, I previously had a carpentry teacher called Mr. Chips, if you can believe it. This Mr. Carpenter taught me how to MIG weld, which is sort of welding with an electric current, as far as I remember. It's a very dangerous thing to do. You had to wear a lot of protective clothing. And I think I had a project, and Mr. Carpenter, who, by the way, was a great horseman. He kept horses and rode a horse and cart, as far as I remember. He examined my work one day, and I remember his phrase as well, because they included bad words, which I shall translate into non-bad words. But he expressed his feelings over my over my my welding project and told me that his horse had put more thought into defecating than I had into my entire project. And
ouch.
So that was a shocking thing to hear. But I think he picked out something about my life that I wasn't exactly interested in engaging the mind, in thinking about anything before I did anything. And this led me to a kind of life which I think lacked thought. I tended to be driven much more by feeling or desire than thinking through doing the right thing. And even if I did try and think about what was right or true or good or wrong, false or evil, I wasn't too sure how to do it. I mean, how do you think through what right decisions are,
right,
or what's good and what's bad? I mean, what should I listen to? What should I watch? Where should I go? What should I do with my life? You sort of need some skills to do that. You need a mind that's engaged, that's willing to learn and willing to think hard. And this, of course, that means I was subject to the prevailing wind. So anything that was popular, that I thought was cool, I would be blown this way and that. And I was sort of foundationless, if you like, sort of lacking a strong rock on which to rest. And someone who lives like that, might find enough wisdom on the wrapper of a Dove chocolate, with which to sort of ply their life with snappy quotes and memes. And that was kind of me. I mean, if I thought it sounded good, I was willing to think it was true. And this makes for a very anemic faith.
Sure.
One that's just sort of got a central idea. Maybe by the time I became a Christian when I was quite young, I think I grasped the gospel quite well, and it had intrinsic beauty, but I failed to sort of go further. As long as Jesus had died for my sins, this was all I needed. And of course, that to some degree, I was right. I mean, that is what you need to know in order to be saved.
Sure.
But there's a lot more to it than that, and the Lord wanted me to use my mind for him. As it turns out, ironically, now, as you can tell by my job title, the Lord has a way of working amazingly in
exactly
people who seem to come from a long way off.
Yeah, and while you're sharing, and we're coming up on a break, Ben, we're talking to Ben Holloway from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, who's an instructor of philosophy and history of ideas. And while we're hearing and sharing your story, Ben, this is not an unfamiliar story to most Christians. I think that oftentimes most of us, a lot of people in Christendom, are a mile wide and an inch deep. We know enough to get saved, but we don't know enough to be dangerous from a kingdom perspective in a world that's getting all the more skeptical. And we need to be ready to have those conversations. We'll keep unpacking what it looks like to re-intellectualize our faith with Ben Holloway. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Okay, listen up, you bunch of dummies. No, everybody relax. We're not all a bunch of dummies, but I think relative to what we could be in the faith and understanding not just the Bible, but having a worldview and then an operational biblical theology in your head and a worldview in your head and then operating in this world, which the world has not taken a back seat on knowledge and skepticism and the amount of information that's out there. And then we have these aggressive atheists out there and all that kind of communication and social media and the internet, and you pile out all that on there. And largely, and if you've listened to this show for a while, you've heard me kind of lament about the de-intellectualizing of the faith. We've de-intellectualized the faith. You ask your average Christian, why do you believe in God? Why do you believe the Bible? How can you possibly say that the Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven? And then you start talking about social issues, or talking about poverty, or talking about immigration, talking about the age of the earth, evolution, the political realms, social sciences, philosophy. Are you ready for those conversations? Now, not every one of us is called to be a teacher. Some of us are, but every one of us should be engaged in our minds as Christ followers. And that's why I keep talking about Romans 12, too. Do not conform to the pattern of this world. Don't think like a worldly person, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And how does that happen? And that's what we're doing today on Theology Thursday with my new friend Ben Holloway, who is a professor out at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary and instructor of philosophy and the history of ideas. It's just an awesome subject. It's right in the middle of Ben's wheelhouse. And again, Ben, thanks for being with us on the show today.
Oh, that's a pleasure.
And so, well, it's great to hear your story, and I think a lot of us probably started off that way, and we got saved, and we know enough to be saved. We know enough theology so that we know where we're going and why. We can understand our sin nature. We can understand why we need a Savior. We can understand why Christ, why the blood, why the cross, why the resurrection. We get all that, but for a lot of us, we don't advance a whole lot past that. We go to Bible studies, and that's all great, but we're talking about going a little bit deeper here, and you were sharing with me some great background information this morning. I want to kind of dive into these three foundations that you laid out here as we begin to what I called re-intellectualize our faith, and we'll break these down, and then we've got several other kind of benefits of doing this. But the first foundation, the Bible. The second foundation is a worldview, an operable worldview. And then the third foundation is a mental skill set, which is really interesting, as Ben will unpack this for us. But let's just kind of kick off our thought. Am I overreacting, or do we have a problem in the church, whether it's here in America or across the sea in Great Britain, where we've largely de-intellectualized the faith?
Well, possibly. I mean, if I'm anything to go by, I certainly took me a while to get the idea that this was something I had to think deeply about. And I think that there are lots of things we assume or we sort of bought into that prevent us from building this sort of a strong mental life, and you know, things like skepticism, that people sometimes believe that really, you know, we really find it difficult to know that we could know anything. So if we're skeptical about knowledge, we might not put a lot of effort into getting to know anything. If we're just getting to know something that might turn out to be false, why bother with it? And other sort of things impact us, like the idea that knowledge is really just the domain of science. And faith is really, you know, more about believing stuff you can't see, or that is unreasonable to believe, or is unscientific. And so there's a sort of division between the two, and really the only people who can provide you with anything true are you know, scientists, and that's plainly false. Not to say anything bad about science. I mean, science is a glorious thing to do. And other people are quite. And I think I had this phase in my life is that. You know, what was real was really just a construct of our minds. And so lots of people sort of believe either that communities are responsible for, you know, what they take to be religious truth. And there's no real way to know the difference, or that none of those things are real at all. And that perhaps you know, our beliefs in God, for example, are, you know, psychological excesses. You know, our brains just naturally produce these beliefs. But there's nothing to them, and all of those sorts of things prevent us in doing some of our hard work of thinking. Of course, the foundations that I sort of gave there are sort of are very obvious ones, but sometimes we skip them. And I mean, for me, you know, the Bible was this incredibly big book that I found very difficult to get into, and I presumed that I shouldn't find it difficult, and I think that's what prevented me from getting a good, strong biblical view, as I thought, well, it should be easy, surely. I didn't have to do anything to be saved, and now you're expecting me to understand Paul. And of course, that's a mistake to think that just because Christ has purchased your salvation through none of your works, that then you are left without anything to do. Reading the Bible and understanding it isn't, of course, doesn't earn you any merit or a favor with God. This is something that Paul tells us in the Bible, that we die in the cross, and we're crucified with him, is essentially to say we give up trying to get God's approval. But we only know that if we apply our minds to figure out what those sentences mean, and that must be the primary sort of part of our mental life, is understanding the Scripture. And without it, the rest won't much matter. You might be very smart in all sorts of other ways, but if the Bible isn't there, you may make a smart human, but you won't think God's thoughts
right
after him. That's where he has expressed his thoughts.
Well, and we see that. Yeah, and I think we see that with the trend that we've seen over the last several years of kids that grow up in the church that may do great. They get their AP credits. They go in with a bunch of credits into college. They can do really well in their classes. They have a lot of knowledge, and they're smart kids. But they're not smart when it comes to the Bible, and so they're easily taken and led astray by philosophy and by false religions and attacks on the faith. But this is a lifetime thing. It's not like you get to a certain point and you're done studying the Bible. But I think we have to understand that the first foundation, if we're going to really glorify God with our minds and make an impact on the world in a lot of realms where you have to have the intellectual firepower to do it, you have to be kind of a constant student of the Bible. There's really no way around that, is there?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's the right way to think about it. We are, in this lifetime at any rate, lifelong students in a classroom at all times, attending to the words of God. And he is our teacher. Christ is our teacher, and we are his students, his disciples, his followers, ready to be taught by him in the word and to sit under his teaching and to be trained by him. And that's sort of fundamental to a Christian intellectual life, I think.
Now let me ask you this right quick, Ben. Would you say, so somebody goes to church on Sunday, then they go to their Sunday school class where there's a pretty good teacher, and then they go to Bible study fellowship on Monday nights. That's really good, but are we talking about something even more invested than that?
Yes, I mean, I would say that is very good. And for me, that's, you know, I wish I'd done more of that younger. You know, being taught by those who have spent time studying is very, very good. They'll be able to unpack things that you hadn't thought about and be able to show you how the word expresses. When you hear a good teacher of the Bible, there's nothing like it. It's brilliant. But, of course, you are also someone who can work on Scripture yourself. And I think I found that very difficult to do to start with. But once one gets over the hurdle of thinking that this is only for those who go to seminary,
right,
only for the professionals, you can realize that you are, you know, capable of, in language, and the more you read it, the more capable you become. And
that's exactly right.
Their content.
That's right. We're talking to Ben Holloway. Ben, I'm going to put you on hold. Ben is an instructor of philosophy and history ideas at Southeastern Baptist. It is, of course, Theology Thursday. When we come back, a worldview and a mental skill set. We'll be right back. Blair.
Tell Bob Cerebellum he says hi.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. I was just giving my friends on Facebook Live a tour up here in Hillville, Virginia. I'm up here with eight other brothers in Christ. I think this is our 11th year coming up here. And we come up here and we do like four sessions where each one of us chooses a topic, or we pull something out of the Bible. It's a Bible study. It's really a Bible study on steroids, but just a great time to hang out. You know, we're supposed to call that fellowship. Just a beautiful setup up here. A dear friend has this house, and they share it with other people for ministry things. And 24 acres up here in the mountains and the hills. It's just beautiful. So suffering for Jesus. So that's where I am this weekend, and I'll be broadcasting again tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be talking about all the big things going on in the news, which are driving me bananas. Had a really difficult day yesterday dealing with all of that. Every once in a while I hit a wall and just kind of get in a fog. And thank you for the people that are on our private prayer group on Facebook. Thank you for your prayers, and God has definitely been answering those. I'm much more encouraged today and feeling better because I'm swimming in this stuff and in this news and studying everything and dealing with tough topics on the air. Every once in a while, it'll put me into a little funk. So I was in one of those yesterday, but God has really cleared that out mostly. But tomorrow we'll be talking about the nightmare in New York. With now you can get an abortion pretty much for any reason right up to the point of birth. It's just disgusting, evil, horrific. That's in New York. They lit up the spire on One World Trade Center pink to celebrate, and they did it with the audacity that they had on the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, the Covington Catholic High School controversy and all that mess. We'll talk about that. A lot of things in the news tomorrow. Donald Trump decided he was going to postpone the State of the Union, so I'm sure the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi are seeing that as a big win. So I got a lot to talk about tomorrow, and I'll do that live from up here in Virginia. But today, Theology Thursday, as it always is, and talking to our new friend Ben Holloway, who's an instructor of philosophy and history of ideas at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. And today we're talking about how do we kind of re-intellectualize the faith. I often lament that we've lost a lot of that, the intellectualized side of our faith and the ability to think and reason biblically, and then to operate that way through that worldview and through that mental set of skills in the world that we live in. And I think in my cousin Vance on Facebook Live is like, I think a big chunk of the population is de-intellectualized, which I agree with, which actually provides an incredible opportunity for us as Christ followers. If you get really good chops mentally and have a good worldview and a great understanding of the Bible and the ability to use it, and you can stay calm and be loving and winsome, this is an incredible opportunity that we have in the culture right now, which is why I'm so excited that we're talking about this today. And again, Ben, thanks for being with us and leading us through this really, really important conversation.
Yeah, pleasure.
So we were talking about kind of the three foundations here, and then we're going to look at kind of the benefits. What's this going to do to your life as you become more intellectually vigorous in your faith? We talked about, of course, the Bible, the first foundation. Without it, nothing else matters. But the second one being, and this is something we've heard a lot about in the last 10 or 15 years, people like Ravi Zacharias on the national stage have really led this charge for apologetics and a worldview. So tell us a little bit about the need for a really vigorous biblical worldview.
Well, I think, worldview is, you have to work on it. And so a worldview is a set of sort of basic assumptions about reality and how you know reality and how, therefore, you shall live. And it means you have to, there's sort of a work in progress in most people's life. Quite a lot of us just hold some basic assumptions about reality and the rest of it, but we don't ever look at them. And we just sort of operate upon them. They're sort of like an operating system in the background that runs along, and we make decisions based on it without thinking about exactly why we've done what we've done. And so I think one of the things that has always challenged me is that must be true of everyone, no matter how well educated they are, that there are assumptions that we make that we haven't checked. It's worth doing. It's work, but to develop a good worldview that coheres with the Bible, but also sees the world rightly, is a lifelong work, but a worthy task, and not something we set aside as Christians, but something we apply our minds to. And thinking that way will help us understand how other people think. I mean, why is it that they cheered in New York yesterday? What kind of worldview produces that cheer? And if you can understand what's going on underneath, you can often engage in conversations that aren't merely a battle of what's right and wrong, but are asking why would you think such things are right or wrong, and they're therefore able to engage in that way. I mean, this is true of our engagement in media, how you swallow assumptions. I mean, stories in TV shows or underlying assumptions in reality TV or whatever have you, we should be able to pass them or think about them in a way that sort of analyzes why they think the way they do. I mean, what's the new show about tidying your house where Marie something? What's her last name? Do you know that show, Steve?
I know what you're talking about. There's so many of them out there now, but yeah. I know what you're talking about.
She goes in and she speaks to the house, and she's very very engaged with things in the house, and you reduce the amount of things you've got, and you want to be able to think, well, why would you see the world that way? Why would you think that material things would somehow order your spiritual life, which is essentially the idea. And you've got to ask yourself about that. What sorts of worldview see the material order as sort of determining the spiritual order? And, of course, we think just the opposite. We have a spiritual problem that requires a spiritual answer, the regeneration of our soul. We don't necessarily speak to the house. We cry out to the Lord. And from that, the Lord graciously brings order into our life, including our mental life and also our practical life. And that's how it works. It's that way around. We have a spiritual problem, not a material problem. Our material problems are cured only when our spiritual problem has been dealt with. Trying to think through that way is to do what Peter tells us in his letter, to be ready to give a reason for the hope, which means being ready to explain our hope. I mean, how does our biblical worldview make sense of the world around us? And that's what people really need to hear, is that they have an experience just like ours, or very similar, and they need someone to make sense of it. I mean, what makes sense of morality? What provides the underlying reality that means that we can make moral claims? We all think there are things that are right or wrong. What makes that possible? And having that kind of establishing your worldview in that way will help us be able to engage in a sort of public defense of the faith, if you like, but also engage in replying to opposing views.
Oh, absolutely. It's an incredible skill to have. And when you study Christian worldview, just like when you study the Bible, when you really start to hone your Christian worldview, it will solidify your own faith. Why do you believe the things that you say you believe? And then as you engage other people, once you have that foundation and that ability to think like that, you can make a rational case for all of your biblical positions. And we see the power and the authority of this right now, not from a Christian perspective, but from a Judeo-Christian perspective, a Western perspective, in somebody like Ben Shapiro, who's one of the most effective communicators in America right now, who is and already is and is becoming more of a moral authority. And that's because he has the ability to unpack and explain his own position, and then he can unpack and explain the fallacy of other people's position. He never takes very long to do that, and it gets right. You know, he's the one that talks about facts don't care about your feelings. So I think he's largely missing that kind of winsome, loving, Christ-like effect for obvious reason, because he's an Orthodox Jew. But his intellectual capacity is the big reason why he's so popular now, because he makes cogent arguments. We do that with the love of Christ and be able to handle a biblical worldview that way and to be able to engage people in their other worldviews, their false worldviews. Man, it's like the sky's the limit when you can get to that point.
Yeah, and I think the Lord has equipped us, each one of us, with minds that can work well. And everybody has the same sort of general set of equipment. I think I was always worried about trying to explain my faith, because I thought there's such a gap between me and someone else, and there really isn't. We both are made in the image of God. We have these capacities to reason,
right.
And even in when an unbeliever denies the truth, they are reasoning in the way God has designed them to some extent. Now they are hostile to the Lord, and so you have to be gracious and tender, as well as convinced and confident about what you're saying, but they have the same set of intellectual equipment, and so they're able to reason like you in that way, and be able to see the conclusion that you've come to. And it's very powerful to be able to take people on a journey through argument, laying out reasons for your beliefs, and to show that that what we believe is a reasonable thing to believe. It's not a punt in the dark. But it is based on good, strong evidence. We have reason for our faith.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes people make the assumption that being a Christian and following Jesus Christ is kind of you check your intellect at the door and you close your eyes and hope for the best and jump off the cliff and hope that he catches you. And so when all of a sudden you can handle yourself in these types of conversations, not only explaining your own faith, but being able to work through in your own worldview, be able to work through somebody else's stated position, asking good questions, then I've seen it time and time again in my own conversations with folks like that. They're pretty shocked that you can do that, and it makes for a powerful opportunity. We'll talk about that next, a mental skill set. And then what are the benefits of doing this? We'll return with Ben Holloway.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It is Theology Thursday, as it is every week, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you want to check out and whether you live in where Southeastern is located, which is Wake Forest, North Carolina, outside of Raleigh, North Carolina, doesn't matter, because you can take classes online. You can take classes that you can spend money on. You can take free classes or certificate classes. Actually, I think one of the most important classes that every one of you should take. I took it. You should take it. It's called hermeneutics. It's basically how to properly study the Bible. It's online. It's free. And our friend Dr. Danny Aiken, the president of the seminary, who's on once a month, teaches it. And you can go through that online at your own pace for free. It's just awesome. So I want you to go to the website, sebts.edu, okay, sebts.edu/radio. And that's going to land you on a page where you can see all these offerings from our friends at Southeastern. And one of the awesome things, one of the best things about our partnership with Southeastern is that every Thursday we get to tap into all the wisdom and the knowledge that God has placed there. And today, certainly doing that with our friend Ben Holloway, who's an instructor of philosophy and history of ideas, as we talk about kind of re-intellectualizing our faith and learning to think and think well. We talked about foundation being the Bible, a worldview. And then the third thing, and then I want to finish the rest of our time, Ben, talking about kind of the benefits of using your mind well. But the third one, which might sound a little out there, so I definitely want a good explanation, is a mental skill set. So we become good students and ongoing students of the Bible. We build a strong biblical worldview. And then we've got this third foundation, a mental skill set. What is that?
I mean, simply, I think we all have a sort of a set of cognitive capacities, if you like. That's a technical word. But our minds can do stuff. And things like understand language, we can automatically hear inferences. So, you know, when you hear two premises of an argument, you can usually just fill in the blank of the conclusion. If I said, if it's an apple, then it came from a tree, and then I said, it is an apple, you would just say, then it fell from a tree, or it came from a tree.
Right.
Isn't it amazing how our minds have been designed to infer things? And developing a mental skill set is essentially to focus on practicing the skills that you've got in your mind. You're able to think critically, you know, assess whether something is true, figure out what would prove that it was true. Right? Does it have evidence, or is it just sound good? And that's a mental skill set that the Lord has given us. And I think, you know, just like any skill, I play the guitar, I have to practice. We've got to practice our mental skills, thinking through sentences, trying to figure out what they mean, trying to see connections between things, and that's really what I mean. It's assessing arguments, for example, and thinking critically. I think that's something I lacked, was the ability to check something before it came into my mind, and having a skill set. That's really what I mean. And in fact, taking that class with Dr. Akin online would certainly give you a part of that skill set. The skill of interpreting text, as hermeneutics is a vital skill for people of the book. So it's been an excellent start. I think that and the benefit of being able to dig into the Bible and come out with a gem of knowledge is just fantastic. In fact, it's the fundamental source of worship. Once you've dug out a nugget of gold from the Bible,
right,
you raise your hand in worship of the Lord.
Amen. What a great point.
Loving the Lord with our minds, as we're told in Luke. We're confronted with a truth that we've dug from his scripture, and this produces in us a great sense of worship. So that's what I mean by mental skill.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, let's kind of turn the corner. We'll finish up our conversation about the benefits of using your mind well as we become better students of the Bible, establish our worldview, and then understand and develop a mental skill set. How do we put all this stuff into use? What are the benefits? And you've got several listed here. I'll just throw it out and then just explain what each one means. And this is the kind of the fruit that's going to come off this tree as we invest in the mental prowess that we have as followers of Christ. First one is personal devotion.
Yeah, I think your intellectual life is a personal thing for your sanctification, and so it's an act of worship to love the Lord with your mind. Isn't it interesting? That's what we're told to do with our minds in Luke 10:27, to love the Lord with our mind, with all of us, but includes our mental life. That's not the bit that gets left off. It's also the bit that mostly people can't see. Obviously, they see the results of our mental life,
right,
what we do with our minds. But no one can see it while we're actively thinking with our minds. It's invisible to the world, but the Lord can see every thought. He can see how our mind is working, what it's focusing on, what we're considering that day. And we're to love him with that. And so this is a beautiful thing, by the way, to use your mental skills in this act of devotion.
We certainly saw this in the life of Paul, and really an intellectual
right.
giant.
Yes,
yet it
yes.
was because it unleashed his understanding of the gospel and Christ even more. He yes. was humbled, and it's really an amazing thing to look at that in Paul's life. Well, what about a public defense? I think, basically on what I do and the way I spend a lot of my time, this is certainly an important piece of fruit that comes off of this tree.
It is, and I mean, I think in this, in our particular time in history, we really need a public defense of the faith from all Christians in all walks
right.
of life. Everybody is surrounded by people who do not know the Lord, who are openly hostile to Christianity, and we do need a good public defense, not left to the few very well-known people, but all of us, I think, even us lot who general churchgoers need
yeah.
to be able to develop a public defense, and that is by thinking through how we might explain the hope that we have. We will be asked about it at some point because our lives presumably will reflect
right.
Something that's unusual. We live a different life, and therefore we'll be giving an explanation for that life.
Yeah, and I think it's important, and this is what happened to me, is I would be running into one particular issue. It would come up a lot, and I'm not trying to learn everything all the time at once. I would just settle in on one issue and get and be well studied and learn it, and then would practice and engage in conversation. And once I got good at that one, I would move on to something else. We're not suggesting learn everything all at once, but one thing at a time, whether it be how do you explain the rational, why do you believe the Bible, why do you believe Jesus is the only way, some things like that, or why do you take the stance on abortion that you do, or a sexual ethic question. You know, work on one and get good at that, and then move on to another one. It's such a great part of what we should be doing as a public defense. What about church discipleship? I think this is an interesting point you brought up.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to think later as I go is that we are all required to teach to some degree.
At some level,
and,
right?
You know, as parents, we're required to pass on the faith to teach and instruct and make disciples of all people. Missionaries are required to make students all over the world of Christ and to place him in Christ's classroom. And this requires that we understand what we're teaching. And I always thought that good construction of sentences, if you like, or good teaching just meant that you had to be able to say something well. But it's actually reverse. You'll only say something well if you know what you're trying to talk about. When you grade papers, you can always tell. If the sentences are good, it usually means they've thought about it well. And people struggle to express themselves when the thinking has been not occurred so well. And you can always tell if you understand something well if you can briefly explain it to somebody
yeah.
else.
Turn around
if
and
not,
teach it.
You need to go back and think about it more. So,
yeah, and I would also encourage everybody if you're ever asked to teach, and now you have to be careful of this because not everybody's got the gift of teaching, but I think we all need to be responsible to pass on information and pass on the faith. But if you have an opportunity to do it, even if you don't think you have the gift, you should do it because I can guarantee you one thing that happens when you step up to the plate and teach at any level is you're going to learn way more than you can teach, and that's something that I experienced, and it had a huge impact on me in my discipleship as I engaged my mind and learned to think better. The final one before we run out of time is personal development. I've seen this one as well with just ourselves as individual Christians. We're not talking about affecting anybody else, but what happens to ourselves, our own lives, Ben, as we become stronger in the intellectual side of our faith?
Well, I think the fall took everything with it, including our intellectual life, our minds. Are not the way they would have been had there been no sin.
Right, right.
And this makes it difficult, but it's not education and learning and study are difficult not because the material's hard, although sometimes it's harder than others, but it's hard because we are fallen creatures inclined not to use our minds, and that's certainly my problem. That I saw that this was the means by which the Lord was going to repair a ruin, as the phrase goes. But I gave my mind over to say, look, I'm going to see if I can use this thing for the Lord. And I think to some extent we're all called to use this, just in
yeah.
varying degrees. I mean, not everyone has to be a professor, but we're all asked to allow the Lord to renew our mind through being trained by him and thereby glorifying the Lord with it.
Yeah, what a great point. And so there's such wide-reaching benefits from working on the intellectual side of our faith, re-intellectualizing the faith, as we've said today. And again, remember Romans 12:2, do not conform to the patterns of this world, bad thinking, false thinking, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, which, of course, is through the Bible itself, a biblical worldview, having a good mental skill set, and you'll see all kinds of fruit develop in your life. Ben Holloway, always great. Thanks for being on again. I really enjoy your great guest, and we'll make sure we do it again, and next time I'll make sure we do it in person.
Would love to. Thank you, Steve.
All right, excellent. Thanks, Ben. We'll talk to you again real soon. God bless you. And there you go, friends, live from Hillville up here in beautiful Virginia. I'll be live again tomorrow talking about the news of the week, which is infuriating, but we'll try to find some joy and some hope in the midst of it. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.